Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Buckhead, Atlanta, it's time for Simply Buckhead Radio with your host, publisher, and founder, Joanne Hayes.
Well, good afternoon. It's Tuesday afternoon, March 3rd, and today we have a very special show. Atlanta Hawks this week are celebrating Neek Week, and in honor of our friend and NBA veteran Dominique Wilkins, who will be in the studio with us shortly, we have some special guests today. So we're going to jump right into it, and Ryan, good to see you this afternoon.
Good to see you, Joanne.
Nice,
what
you
a lovely
board.
Day to be in here with some of the Hawks family, getting ready
awesome.
To talk about Mr. Wilkins and all his accomplishments as they celebrate that this week down at Phillips Arena.
Yes, and we have some historic moments right here in the studio before Neek even gets here. We've got Bob Rathbun with us today and Steve Holman, the voice of the Hawks, and these two gentlemen have never been in a radio studio together, so this is pretty historic for the Hawks as well. This is definitely a first. Welcome to both of you.
Well, thank you, Joanne.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Let's see how it goes first.
Oh, my gosh. This
claim
is
history.
Definitely history. And in addition, we also have Rutherford Seidel, one of the owners of the Atlanta Hawks. Welcome, Rutherford. So glad you could be here today, too.
I'm glad to be here. And my son and his whole generation are thrilled that we're on internet radio.
Yes, I know. This is a unique thing. And when people ask me, where can they listen to the show? And I tell them it's podcast. It's in perpetuity. It's not like once the show is done, it's gone. People go back and listen to us. They come to us asking for prior shows, looking to find it. And it's a great format. Puts us in front of audiences that are somewhat hard to reach. It's a very unique format. And yes, very progressive and very up to date. And the kids love it.
Usually it's just lawyers looking for previous broadcasts of mine.
trying to trip you up.
I was told there'd be no lawyer bashing.
No, I know. No lawyer bashing. We have a good one in the studio with us today. So let's talk a little bit about some of the history each of you has with Neek as we're waiting for him to come in. Rutherford, I think probably you've known him the longest. Am I right?
Well, I'll give you the clean version. We went to Georgia together, so we were, you know, young college kids, and he was just the legend on campus. You had Herschel Walker and Dominique walking on the same campus, same time. I mean, that's just amazing to think about when you look back and see the dearth of legends that we really had, unfortunately. Dominique's jersey is the only one that's retired up in Athens. Mm. It happened in 91. And so Georgia basketball program has not been the premier basketball program in college basketball. But Dominique also just a lot of fun to be with. Mm-hmm. All those years, he was just the most personable guy you can imagine. And so we hang out and we're buddies in college. And to be able to take it further when I first got my chance to buy a season ticket, I did it because Dominique Wilkins was coming to town and Ted Turner was smart enough to sign him up. And the exciting part about that is it's turned into be where we're sort of partners and all colleagues here, you know, trying to get a championship this year together. And just pursuing our passion is turning into being something great and a good business opportunity and all the things that I just was following this from day one. And Dominique, for me, has been the genesis of my passion for the Hawks.
Well, I love it. Recently, Neek and I were talking about this, and he's very excited that he's going for his first ring. And,
right.
You know, it's a big deal. This is a great year to be involved with the Hawks. I mean, we became members and season ticket holders this year after attending, you know, 20 games last year and about 15 or 18 the year before. And, welcome, Neek. Great to have you in studio. We'll let you get set up. And, you know, we decided this year we were going to take the plunge and couldn't have scripted this one any better if we tried. We are true fans, very excited to be a part of it. And every day is as exciting as the one before it. So it's been a great journey this year. And we know it's going to be a great end of the season as well. So Rutherford, it's so much fun to hear you talk about that. I saw that in your bio. I knew the timing. You must have been at college at the same time. And
so Neek just got here. I'm giving the clean version of our relationship starting in college. And I was just bragging on you and how what a legend you were to have around and a good friend. And here we all are together going full steam ahead into the future on internet radio.
Yes, internet radio. Welcome, Neek. So glad to have you this afternoon.
Well, a couple accidents on the highway. Sorry for getting late.
That's okay. Hey, we're thrilled to have you here. And we've got some esteemed guests here. We've been talking about this week being a historical week. Not only are we celebrating the statue that's being unveiled and your legacy here in Atlanta, but we've got two newscasters, broadcasters here in the studio that have never been in the same place together.
That's a first.
That's a first. That's
been
a first.
A lot of airplanes together.
Yeah, a lot of airplanes.
I'm
and
sure.
A third broadcaster.
Never doing
yes,
interviews
now
together.
Yes, now a third. I know. I love it. I love it. Well, let's talk a little bit about some back history here. Neek, I saw, you know, from what I've read about you, you've lived in at least four places that I know about, but you were born in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
You lived in Baltimore.
I grew up in Baltimore.
You grew up in Baltimore, mm-hmm. I believe you went to high school in North Carolina?
Oh, that's a long story, but I'll give you the short version. I started high school at Patterson High in Baltimore, Maryland, but most of my family lived in North Carolina. And when I was 16, I decided to leave home and told my mother I was going to North Carolina. And she said, "What do you mean you're leaving?" And I said to her, "The only way I can help the family, I have to leave now." Because Baltimore at that time was a very, very rough city.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been on my own since I was 16, and I got discovered on the playground in North Carolina, and that's how it all started.
That's fabulous. And then you came to Georgia, obviously, for college. You know, and you and
Which
Dwayne know
stink.
Each other as well,
right.
I'm sure. And you and Dwayne worked together for the Hawks, and I thought it was kind of funny. Dwayne Farrell went to Georgia Tech, so you yeah. guys must kind of go
Well, he
at
was
each
my
other
rookie when he first came to the league. He did everything I told him to do. No, he had to carry the bags. You had to go get food. He had to do all those things that rookies have to do. Back then, they can't do it anymore. But Dwayne's a great guy and just turned 50. This week.
Yes, yeah, I saw that. I saw that. And you and I are actually the same age. And honestly, I still feel like I'm in my 30s. So it's kind of funny. And you showed your skills at the NBA All-Star Weekend, as
yeah.
I wrote about it. You'll see this coming up this week. I've brought a copy of it with me. But my publisher's corner for both the website and the magazine, mm-hmm. I used that to celebrate you as well. And I said, Dominique still has it at age 55.
Mm-hmm.
He went out there and won the Shooting Stars Challenge.
And he actually won it. I mean, he's
he
the one
won
who made
it.
The shot.
I
yes.
know. He won it. We loved it. We were watching from home, and we loved it. And I said, he still got it, and he's the same age as me. So hallelujah to that.
And well, you know, it's funny because people think when you get a certain age, all of a sudden you're supposed to be in a rocking chair or just kind of waste away.
Uh-uh.
You know? I'm still kind of competitive, you know. And the thing is that I knew going into that competition that we was going to win it. I knew it. As a matter of fact, they kind of gave it to us in a way because the last group, the Westbrook group, they couldn't make any shots. And I said, guys, you can just give it to us.
Well, you yeah. also had a little motivation, too.
Yeah, it had Scottie Pippen was also involved in that competition. He could. I wasn't going to let Scottie beat me. Are you kidding me? It's yeah. still that competition thing.
And the
you know?
Commentators, yeah. too. Kenny yeah, the Jet was on your case.
Well, Kenny is really, I want to say this in a mild way.
It's the internet. You can say whatever
know.
You want.
Yes.
He don't know what the hell he's talking about.
There's no regulations here.
He don't know what the hell he's talking about. It's like you must have forgot. I mean, it's like he's senile or something. You know, I like you play with him. You know, I did more than just dunk. I didn't get all those points on dunks. I could shoot the ball.
That's right.
I just
that's
can't
right.
run anymore.
Well, and that's part of our age thing, I think, too. So let's talk a little bit.
You don't need to if you make all your shots from half court.
Yeah.
That's right.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the stats here. And then we're going to ask you two gentlemen, Bob and Steve, since you've been calling these games forever. Bob, unfortunately, you didn't come on board till 96.
That's
so
right.
You didn't get to call any of these games where Neek played. I'm sure that would have been amazing for you at the time. Steve, you've been with them for years.
Right, 30 years, yeah.
30 years. You've seen it all. Can you tell us how many consecutive games our readers may or may not know about this and our listeners? How many consecutive games have you called for the Hawks?
I think it's 21-98.
Yes, because it
99
was
99 tonight, maybe 21-99.
Yes.
If I can make it there,
you'll
here.
Make it there.
Yes.
But it was 21-96 a couple weeks ago, so I'm
right.
glad you were right up to date on that. But you know, one of the quotes I loved the best came from Steve Koonin, and this is going to be included in my publisher's letter. Dominique Wilkins has represented the Hawks organization and the city of Atlanta in a first-class manner for over three decades. He is synonymous with Atlantan sports greatness, and this statue and week-long celebration is fitting for his contributions to Atlanta and his place as the greatest player in franchise history. My comment was that no truer words have been spoken about you. And in the short time that we've personally known you in the last few years, it couldn't be truer. I've never seen anybody so excited about the fans still. After every game, there are people clamoring to talk to you, to have their mm-hmm. tickets signed, to have their basketball signed, and you stay and talk to
you
every
know,
single
I
person.
I tell people all the time, the fans make us who we are. And it really disturbs me when I see guys who are not willing to engage themselves with the fans. Because without them, we're nobody. And so these fans, a lot of these fans, their parents supported me.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times I have to tell, and even our security people, you know what? It's okay. Our fans can do whatever they want when it comes to me. I don't mind that. Because at the end of the day, I was one of those kids that idolized someone and couldn't get that close.
Mm-hmm.
So I give the fans a chance to you know, be heard, to come and talk and just be around us. And I tell guys all the time, it's what you do today that dictates who you become in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about. It shouldn't be just about you. It's got to be about the people. And
who was your idol? Who were your idol?
Dr. J. Everybody yeah. wanted to be like the doctor. You know, Dr. J was a movie star when he came to the NBA. And so he was the first guy who really put the NBA on kind of a world tour, because he was the man. And so every young kid growing up wanted to be like the doctor.
I'm not sure, though, if the fans would have appreciated the 76ers gear when they were in town.
Hey, well, you know, I wore some 76er gear. I'm not gonna lie. When I was a kid, I mean, because again, you know, and that's when, you know, when you talk about history, that you have to have history is very important, because as kids, if you don't have that history of someone to look up to, who do you look up to? You know, if you're not looking up to a mother or father, you have to have those heroes out there. That's why it kills me when people try to eradicate history. You can't eradicate, because, you know, as long as you fight history, history always fights back. And so you got to be willing to embrace history. You got to, if you can, tweak it and make it better. But that's who we are. That's what this is about. Mm-hmm. And when you can do that, you know, you can cement your place in history. And those kids coming up behind us have someone else to look up to.
And that's exactly what we're doing this week. So for those of you who may not know what's happening this week, it is Neek Week, and we are celebrating the installation of an 18,500-pound granite statue.
That's heavy.
Wow. Yes, very heavy.
That's heavy.
13 and a half feet tall, with Dominique in one of his signature poses, is being placed at the arena on Thursday, and on Friday it will be available for the public to see. So that's what we're celebrating this week, for Dominique's accomplishments and contributions to the sport, to the city of Atlanta, and to the sports community. And those of us in the room are very appreciative of the opportunity to do this.
I haven't slept in 3 days.
I'm sure. Oh, this is very exciting. Is all your family here this week?
Yeah, a lot mm-hmm. of people here. A lot of people here that's going to be here that I don't even know is coming. But, you know, this is a special moment. I mean, I cannot sleep. I mean, because as close as it gets, it's nerve-wracking.
Well, you shouldn't. This is an important moment in history, and you want to remember every single minute of it.
Exactly.
So it's very exciting. And
the best part is he's alive while we're doing this.
He's
too.
Alive while we're doing
you know
this.
What, they didn't wait until he was dead.
But you know what the most important for me is? That my mother's still here.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize you were one of 8 kids. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Where do you fall in the lineup?
Next to the oldest.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And you have one sibling who also became an NBA player.
My brother Gerald, yes. Mm-hmm. And I have my son who's playing at University of Virginia, and hopefully my youngest son. And you know, he's special, and I think he's going to carry on that legacy. And,
I'm sure you're mentoring him.
Oh yeah, no question. Then I had Nesru who played in the NBA. So basketball is a part of our life.
Yes, and that's one thing that we've come to know about you as a person. Even when you're not on duty, we're all talking basketball, and
I'm
we all have
on
a
duty.
Passion. I know we're always on duty.
I'm always on duty.
We're always talking basketball. You know, we're always talking about the team and players, and you know, just the community, the sense of community around the Atlanta Hawks. I just find to be fascinating. All of you sitting in the room, you've gotten to know us, and we just feel like we're part of a family. And that is a very hard atmosphere to create. And this year, I feel like it's been something really super special. I mean, you can walk in the arena and see so many people that you recognize from other games and that you just know from the game, former players. And
it's karma and harmony and peace that the organization has, the players, the coaches have. It's been a long time since they had this type of harmony on our team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I know a lot of credit wants to go everywhere else but where it should go, and that's to Coach Bud and his coaching staff. That's where the credit deserves.
Phenomenal.
That's where it should stop, at Coach Bud, because it's very hard to get 12 guys to buy into your system and have the same goal in mind, because you always have some questionable attitudes and characters on your team. But to have 12 guys to buy into a system it takes a pretty strong coach to get them to do that. And he deserves all the credit.
I think they're all seeing that it works. The system mm-hmm. works. He's respectful of families. He's respectful of the team. He's respectful. He knows who needs to be rested when. And when people question why he's resting people, you got to know that he's got something else up there that he knows that the rest of us don't know.
Well, he hates that word, resting.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys are banged up. And they don't like that word, resting.
Oh, they
don't. They're recovering. Yeah.
They're recovering. Right. Okay, well, we'll use that word from now on. Bob, I want to turn to you. Since you work with Neek on a regular basis, you guys travel together, you're working together all the time. Tell us some fun stories about Neek that we wouldn't know as listeners,
He's saying no.
As readers. He's saying no? There's got to be some clean stuff we can talk
there's
about.
There's a few. You know, it's interesting, Joanne, the parallel tracks that we both took in terms of geography, and both of our moms are named Gertrude.
Oh, wow.
So both of us moved to North Carolina for high school. I got to Salisbury, which is on the western part of the state, and Neek was down east at Washington. I was 12 when my dad was transferred, and so I grew up working at this little radio station, and started when I was a sophomore in college.
I was going to say you were 19. Mm-hmm. I saw that.
When I went on full time when I was a sophomore in college. And the little high school that we did was Salisbury High School. And Neek's junior year, the entire state of North Carolina came together to have a true state championship. This is something they did not have. The Western schools were separate from the rest of the state. The first year they came together was his junior year, and they played in the state quarterfinals, Salisbury High School in Durham at the state championship. We came in second that night, but I had a chance. But I had the chance to broadcast Neek as a high school player.
Wow!
Back in North Carolina, and then later at Georgia, I broadcast an NIT game that Neek played in. So I had the chance to broadcast him in high school, college, and then, of course, the tail end of his NBA career. So it was, I knew Neek before everybody got a chance, because he was in Sports Illustrated, back in the pre-cable TV days and pre-internet days. You know, you waited every week for Sports Illustrated to come out. And they had a little section, they still have it today, called Faces in the Crowd.
Yes,
right. Y'all familiar with that?
I remember.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there was a little article about this kid in Washington, North Carolina. And you had one of those unreal games, 47 points and 20 rebounds
actually,
and 10 blocks and all
was
that.
30 rebounds.
Well, whatever you had. I mean, it's.
Who's counting?
It was off the chart.
But it changed me
five rebounds. But it was so phenomenal that Sports Illustrated put Neek in as a face in the crowd. And that's where the world started to learn about Dominique Wilkins. And then Five Star comes about. And a guy named Howard Garfinkel comes up and hands him the nickname, the Human Highlight Film. And that moniker has stayed with you ever since. And so that's where I go back with
Dominique Wilkins. You did have a history of broadcasting with him. That's interesting. I figured it went right past that, so great story.
And it was filmed back then, too. That was
Wow. Because you hear it now.
Projectors.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, and that's where the name came from.
No cell phone videos.
No.
Steve, what about you? Can you tell us a good story?
Well,
that was pretty clean, so you're...
No, I think...
He set the bar.
You know, there have been so many, the night he set the all-time Hawks scoring record, that was very special. When he became the... when he passed Bob Pettit for the all-time, Hawks and so many others that he one night he scored 23 out of 23 from the free throw line, which was an NBA record that still stands now regular season. Mm-hmm. I think somebody got it last year.
Dirk Nowitzki, playoff.
But that was kind of special to me. And I think the funniest things that happened when I first started doing the games, he gave me the nickname Tweety Bird, which...
Does that still stick?
Which he hated when he first heard it.
Well, now I have embraced it. I enjoy it. But they had a Tweety Bird doll where I would broadcast from every night, and I never knew what it was about, but he had given me the name. So... You know, that's how, you know, it took me a few years to figure that out.
I was going
to
say, everybody was in on the joke except for you.
Right, exactly. Yeah, even the engineer who put the Tweety Bird thing there every night, you know, knew about it except me. But I'm great with it now, you know.
Oh, he hated it back then. Maybe we turned two different colors back then. Like,
yeah.
But what the hell is Tweety Bird?
You still have it?
Oh, I don't have the actual doll, but I have the name still. So, in fact, he brought it up the other night on a videotape that they did up on the board.
You saw that?
Yeah, I did see that. Yes. So, I think some of the other fun things that happened over the years, you know, when we were all younger, I thought that was kind of the neat part of those '80s teams, that we were all kind of the same age. You know, I'm a few years older than you
guys.
We
were very close.
Right.
We were close.
It was a close. You know, and we all had, you know, kids at the same time, and you know, it was different then. Now it's, you know, we're like, you know, the kids are younger than our kids now that are playing. But you know, we went to the Soviet Union in 1988. It was still the Soviet Union then, and there were some wild stories there. And you know, Neek himself had to he didn't fly with the rest of us on that trip. Got there a day or two
later.
Well,
I got to Russia. Everything went downhill as I started to go to Russia. And I remember sitting in the airport for 14 hours and didn't know what plane I was supposed to catch.
Right.
And I had someone point me in three different directions. So I saw a lady with a bag that said Vilnius, which that's where the team was. So I said, well, I'll just take a chance. I'll get on this plane.
Yeah.
So I had to go on the right plane.
They held you for a long time,
too,
right?
They held me for 6 hours.
Yeah, like the KGB or whatever. And
it was terrible.
And basically, And
that's not a place you want to go back for a vacation.
It's different now. It's a great place.
It's different now. I mean,
yes.
It was
nice
still
very
now.
Different.
It was right before everything had happened. So I mean, kind of neat historically that we were there right before everything kind of broke loose. But but at the time, though, they told us it was going to be red carpet treatment, and you know, it was
red carpet, but the carpet had been there for about 70 years.
Well, a lot of the carpet was red from people being stabbed in the hotel we basically, I mean, the food wasn't exactly five-star food.
Boring.
I mean,
a lot of radiation.
Basically, yeah. Well, the milk had lumps and things like that. You know, not to get too gross about it, but I mean, basically, for 15 days, we lived on cucumbers, tomatoes, and warm vodka is what we lived on for 15 days.
See what they did know, I bought a whole big bag full of food, from tuna fish to Vienna sausage. It lasted about a day when those guys found out I had their food.
Well, yeah. Antoine Carr and his brother who came and played, remember?
Yes.
He had a big suitcase full, and he barricaded his door in the hotel. Because in those hotels, they didn't have locks on the doors.
Wow.
They had all the keys at the desk. I mean, that was when it was still being run as the Soviet Union. But he barricaded, and Henry, his brother, They barricaded that door, remember, because he had that food and everybody was trying to get it.
I'm going to tell you a funny story. So I get there, my first day I get there, and I'm tired. So I fall asleep, and I roll over, and it's sunlight out, man. I said, well, it's time to get up and go to practice. I get up and go downstairs in the lobby. There's no one to be seen. I mean, no one in the lobby. And so I'm looking at my watch, and now, again, it's broad daylight. It's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, you know, somebody should have warned you about that. One summer, I was in Finland and went up to Lapland, went up to Oulu, and it was the middle of July. So if it was the summertime, I had no idea. The sun literally went down at midnight and came back up at 2:30 in the morning, which makes it almost impossible to sleep. So it was probably
I was so upset.
Did you go back to sleep?
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about Hall of Fame for a moment, because I understand, Rutherford, that you are the only owner of the Hawks who actually went to the Hall of Fame induction when Neek was inducted.
Well,
what was that like?
First of all, I went up as a friend, and I was an owner at the time. But it was to see your whole family and to see Dominique. They took the Winnebago, and they went up there. I cheated and flew, but I was, you know, it was my first time being there, and I knew from watching Dominique at Georgia, just really from the whole journey as a fan, really. As I said, as I just got out of school, I bought my season ticket right next to Stan, and I had a bunch of other guys. We all went on 4 tickets, and just growing up with Neek as our hero and our friend, seeing him accomplish this unbelievable feat. And you look around and you see the legends, and we were at the Legends brunch of the day in New York at the All-Star game, sitting together. And I just pinched myself, because just being a spectator of something that, seeing a guy, I heard this story on NPR this week. They studied many millions of people, and they said what really defines success. And the one word that kept coming up was grit. And when you think about what grit is, I think you have tenaciousness, persistence. I think also you're very positive, and you're always thinking the best, and you just keep working hard and giving your best. And Dominique defines for me what grit really is, and that's why I think that long studies turn out to be you find guys successful. There's Dominique right there with the, probably the grittiest basketball player I've ever seen. When we played for many years at Georgia, we didn't have a lot of other players around him, and he still, you know, had an all-time scoring record. I think you won the SEC 91, won the all-SEC player, and that was when Georgia was nothing. And then you get to the Hawks, and we were just getting going again, you know. And there he was just battling and being a great teammate. And I think also, as he said earlier, being out there for the fans and always smiling and doing everything. And I think, you know, if Dr. J was somebody you looked up to, and Dr. J lives in Atlanta now and will be part of this, he certainly is fulfilled and done all the things that Dr. J did in his life, and now Dominique's done in his.
So for and me, then
it was
some.
Thrilling to see where Dr. J ends up as the Hall of Fame. You know, that's where you want to be. Guess who else is up there, too? So it was a great honor for me to be up there with Dominique.
I love the use of the word grit, because another word I would definitely use is a word that I saw you gave to Larry Bird in an article that I read that the Boston Globe did. Mm-hmm. And you talked about playing with Larry Bird, that no other players have the kind of heart that he had playing back then. And
that era, period. Mm-hmm. The Larry Birds, the Magic Johnsons, the Michael Jordans, the Kareems, it's too many players that had that killer instinct. And so you couldn't take nights off, because if you took nights off, you got embarrassed, period. I mean, Larry had 60 against us one game. I mean, you can't have nights like that if you're not a great player. Mm-hmm. You don't have those nights. Those nights are not a fluke. And he did it night in and night out. And you go down the line, all the great players in that era. I would, and people ask me all the time, would you want to play in this era opposed to the era you played in? I'm like, absolutely not, because that era is the greatest era of basketball in the history of our sport.
Couldn't
agree
with
you
more.
It's not even debatable. I know a lot of people try to compare, and I hate comparisons, but it's not even debatable. It's not even close. I mean, it's too many great, skilled, big players. Look, I'm 6'9". I played small forward in that era. I could play power forward now. Mm-hmm. It's just a fact. But those guys in the era taught me the true meaning about being an NBA player and how to play the game. And that's why I always talk about Lou Hudson and Dan Brownfield and Walt Bellamy, Pete Maravich. Those guys prepared me for the NBA. You know, where can you go and get that type of history, that type of talent to teach you how to play the game? And it's really disturbing that a lot of guys today don't access that information. It's so valuable. It's right there in front of them, but a lot of times they don't access it.
Well, many of us grew up watching you and Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. I mean, I grew up as a teenager in Rhode Island, and so obviously, I know, naughty word here, Celtics.
Okay. He played for the Celtics.
I know.
He worked for the Celtics. It's okay.
I know. I did see that. We talked about this before the show. We all have some New England history here. Bob was born in the same town where I lived for 20 years before moving to Atlanta, and Steve, of course, is from Massachusetts. So.
And I've hated the Celtics ever since.
I'm sure. But
I played with them and hated them.
Yeah. Well, we grew up in that era, so of course we were Celtics fans, and it was long before I came to Atlanta and could never have predicted, you know, what would happen to us and having this wonderful relationship with the Hawks, which were very appreciative.
Talk about those battles with, you know, Dominique and Larry and all those guys, and they weren't all pals then like they are now. Oh, when you see guys out there hugging each other before games and everything else and during warm-ups.
A prime example, Bird and I never shook hands the whole career. Never, not once, shook hands.
Wow.
I mean, the first time I went to shake his hand, he took his hands and put them behind his back and just looked at me. And I'm like,
I think he was trying to mess with you.
You know what? I'm a rookie, so that's his way of kind of initiating me. But Detroit was like that. Chicago, I mean, all the big teams was like that. It was no pals. We didn't go away during the summer and work out with each other in the gym. We might play against each other, play basketball in summer leagues, but we didn't go in the gym and work out. That's not how you get better as a player. How you get better as a player, play basketball, play basketball, play basketball. And that's why I have a problem with analytics. I have a major problem with analytics because analytics is a minute part of the game. It's a very useful part of the game. But basketball and sports is a gut feel. And there's no analytics in the world can tell me that I like to shoot the ball better here as opposed to over here because you take what the defense give you. And so the analytics always discredit the mid-range game. And, Bob, you and I talk about this all the time. Mm-hmm. The mid-range game is the most efficient, high-percentage shot in basketball outside of a layup or a dunk. But they try to discredit because they want to see three-point shots.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem with that. And if you're a three-point shooter, you're a three-point shooter. Great. But everybody is not a three-point shooter.
No.
And that's how teams get themselves in trouble.
I think we're fortunate we have so many shooters and so many weapons on the Hawks. There's so many guys who can shoot threes, but they're also good at getting through the lane and posting the layups and dunking the ball and mid-range shots. I mean, it seems like we've got a good balance.
It's the perfect group of guys. You got 10 guys who can shoot the ball, but you got 10 guys with different skill set, and it all works together. You know, each night, you never know who's going to be the guy to have a big night.
That's half the fun of watching. That's half the fun of being a fan. And even when we're not in the arena watching, when the team is away, we're watching. Mm-hmm. We're watching every minute of every game. We're shouting at you two while we're at home watching. We're shouting at Bob and Neek. They're calling the game, and we're yelling at the screen. And it's a lot of fun to be a fan. That's for sure.
We'd love to see a fadeaway mid-range off the backboard shooter. Like Dominique. I mean, that shot was unstoppable, and mm-hmm. when he was hitting it, it was just magic. And I really haven't seen anybody execute. You talk about mid-range shots. Mm-hmm. That's the ultimate mid-range shot. That even on the court after the games, I play horse with my friends, and we try to just hit that a few times with nobody guarding us. It's an impossible shot, and that's not even
takes work.
Yeah.
This whole week has been meaningful to me. In that an entire new generation of Hawks fans is learning about Dominique Wilkins.
Mm-hmm.
People have forgotten over time how hard he played and what he meant to this game. Never took a night off. Every night was game seven. And you don't see that a lot today. And I think that's one of the reasons fans have so embraced this Hawks team.
Mm-hmm.
We do
play hard every night. Yes.
And we do it 10 deep, and they pass it and share it and do all the things that we've talked about. But with Neek, to see this tribute finally come,
mm-hmm.
You know, you all talked about the Hall of Fame a minute ago. That's for the world.
Mm-hmm.
The world recognizes Neek as one of the great players of all time. But this is for us.
Yes.
This is for Atlanta. This is for Hawks fans everywhere.
That's a great point.
And I think that's why I never saw you get this emotional about the Hall of Fame. Never.
Right.
But this, I mean, you can't go 5 minutes without the emotions tugging at you in the planning and the preparation to get ready for this. So this is really something special and something very unique to our city and obviously to Dominique. And it just gives you such a good feeling because we haven't had this many seminal moments in Atlanta sports history that's like this. And I think that's why everybody feels so good about it.
I think you're right. It's a new generation of fans. And as Neek just said a few minutes ago, it's, you know, we are all in the age range. I think Rutherford's the youngest of all of us here. But
what? by hair.
Yes,
and looks
he
it.
Is.
Yeah. And looks it. Yeah.
His hair is real.
Yeah.
And you know, realistically, we all grew up watching, and we've all seen it, and we all knew Neek. But as you mentioned, Steve, I think you mentioned, our kids are younger. The kids watching now are younger than our own kids. I mean, I'm a little bit older parent. I've got stepchildren at home that are 15 and 19. But, I mean, most of the people that are my age, their kids are like in their 30s. And for them, they might have grown up watching too. But the younger fans are learning about you in a way that they would have never known. Yeah. Even my son came down to say hello to you.
My youngest son is 8. First one of my kids. I have 8. First one of my kids that ever watched film of me is my youngest son.
Wow.
He's basketball through and through. And to have a young son like that to kind of learn the history on his own about what his father did, because he really don't know what I did. He's too young. But he's starting to know because he started at a very early age. And a youngest son and I, that's all we do is talk basketball. every day. And that's something that I've never done with my other kids because I was always busy, always running. First time in my life I'm able to sit down with my younger kids and just enjoy. And it's just, for me, it's a pleasure to kind of sit down and talk about what I used to do. And my youngest son asked a lot of questions about what I did. And so we were playing a couple weeks ago, and I brought my son to the game. And his mom said, "You see that up in the rafters? You know who that is?" And he looked at it. He didn't pay. He was oblivious to that. So he looked up. He kept looking up. He's like, "Yeah, Mom, that's me." She said, "Yeah, in a way."
Not yet.
But he's sitting in the back with a rolled up magazine, and he's just talking to himself as Jacob Dominique Wilkins, you know, just getting into the moment all by himself. And we just was looking at him and was just amazed how much he loves the game of basketball. And that's nothing I push on my son. It's just a part of his life.
Well, he's going to look at it someday and say, "Gee, Dad, this is really cool. You were really great." And he's going to get it. It's going to, like, the light bulb's going to click.
You hope so. You know, I remember my oldest son who's at Virginia playing now. I remember when he was 14, I said, "I'm going to teach you how to play the game. We're going to work on some different things." And he said, "Hey, Dad, you know, my AAU coach told me it'd be better if I trained this way." I'm like, let me ask you something. "Do you know what I do for a living, the level I did it?" I'm like, "Are you serious?"
Right.
So I told him, I said, "You know what? Do it his way." I said, "When you get your butt kicked, we come back and do it my way." What happened? He got his butt kicked. So he finally came back, and he still didn't get it. So one of his friends was saying, he said, "You know what? You're stupid." He said, "We don't have what you have at home." And he said, "Maybe you should listen to your dad, because I think he knows what he's talking about." And he said, "We wish we had what you had." And that's the only thing to turn my son around.
I think it was the close to home part of it. It's sometimes it's harder to trust your parents.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just dad. Exactly. What do I know? We don't know very much to begin with. So I wasn't surprised with that.
Well, long career on the road, too. You know, we often talk about how hard it is on the families, and you mentioned that. It's hard when you're on the road and you're busy and you've got a schedule and there's practices and, you know, you're watching your family grow up, and it's tough. So it must be a joy at this age.
Well,
to
I'm still on the road.
I know you
I'm
are.
I'm probably more on the road now than when I was a player because, you know, you juggle a few different things. You know, basketball and television is just who I am, part of my life. But my calling right now is healthcare and diabetes.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that. You beat me to the punchline.
Yeah, that's who I am now. I mean, because it's, again, continue to help people help themselves.
Well, let's talk about that for a few minutes. We see you in the television commercials for the Novo Nordisk drug. Obviously, they're doing a big push in the Atlanta market. I'm guessing it's probably national.
We
see it outside of Atlanta.
And the thing is about the commercial is giving people options, giving people options to find medications that works for them. And I take Victoza, but it's a medication that works for me. It may not work for everybody, but at least it gives you the option of different medications to use. And that commercial is very important to us because, again, we're reaching out to so many type 2 diabetics around the country to give them options to live healthy. But again, just taking medication alone don't get it.
Well, the adult diabetes, you found out.
It's diet and exercise.
And you found out at a late age, obviously, it's adult diabetes.
At age 40. Yeah.
So, you know, people probably assume because you're an athlete, you eat healthy, you exercise, you're invincible, exactly. Yeah. And then you find out that you have this condition. Is it hereditary? Is it something that is onset by other triggers?
It's a combination thing. Definitely it's hereditary because my father and grandfather both died from diabetes. And so somebody in my family was bound to have it. I didn't think it would be me because being a great athlete, you just think that it could never happen. But when I stopped training and working out and playing, 1 year after I retired, I found I was diabetic. And so I lost 33 pounds in 2.5 months because I got back to doing some things I used to do. I started working out, changed my diet, and unfortunately, on medication.
Yeah, it's part of the aging process. And as you said, heredity. I think we just found out my mother has adult diabetes, so I'm waiting to see what's in store for me.
And I think the thing you got to let people know is that, first of all, diabetes is not a curse. It's just an obstacle in the road that you go around. But until you find a cure for diabetes, your cure is diet, exercise, and medication. the noni juices, super cookies, and all that. None of that stuff work. You know, sitting on a couch with a weight band on that giving you some type of pulsating rip. It don't work.
It doesn't?
It doesn't work. Get off the couch.
Yes, well, I'll get off the couch and in the gym.
Laura and I have been associated with juvenile diabetes for many, many years. In fact, I'm not bragging, but Dominique, we're going to be getting honored, and Dominique will be with us this year. But I think that when Dominique came down with diabetes, my hero, my friend, it really, you know, and as a non-juvenile, you know, I said, wow, you know, because I knew he had taken care of himself and done everything you could do. Mm-hmm. So we really need to fight for that cure and put the money and time and effort into those things. And that's another team effort that we work on the side. But I have to tell you that him coming out and talking about it, you know, this is something that I think a lot of kids and a lot of adults who have thought of this as a stigma, as something that they were embarrassed about, now say, well, wait a minute, you know, Dominique's got it, you know, no big deal, just take some medication. But you're right. And like, you know, like me, he married up, and Sonny is going to make sure that he eats right and exercises. I don't know if you've seen her lately.
Oh,
yes. She's winning competitions.
Oh, I know,
so,
I know.
So I think that's
been
helpful.
Press is on, man.
But I do think that it's you've given a new voice and certainly a lot of encouragement,
you know,
to a lot of people.
Novo Nordisk made something clear to me not too long ago. They said, you know, you've been in front of over 300,000 or 400,000 people in the last 7 years.
Yeah,
doing this.
Yeah,
and I didn't realize that.
It's
a lot of folks,
and you've even had to deal with politicians, which
I actually I really love that, because you see a different world. I have a newfound respect for politicians. Because you think what they do is easy? That's a tough business.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be one.
No.
But it's a tough business. I do a lot of stuff on Capitol Hill, do a lot of work, philanthropy work, with a lot of our local congressmen who spend a lot of time in D.C. So all of us work together on healthcare issues.
That's phenomenal. Obviously, we've seen it become even more prominent over the last 2 years here in Atlanta. We've seen it. So
you know who got me started in diabetes?
Who?
Blow you away is Newt Gingrich. Now I know you say
really?
Newt Gingrich and Dominique. How is these two kind of connected? It's not political. It's all healthcare. He's a brilliant man. It's one of the smartest men I've ever met.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Six Sigma black belt guy, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
hey. Serious businessman. Well, let's talk a little bit about what else is going on this week. So we know that there is yesterday you were on a couple of shows.
10 to be exact.
Yes, a couple of shows. So you hopped from one city to another, mm-hmm. and lots of radio and TV time.
Well, when you go to ESPN, ESPN is its own campus.
Yeah, you were in Bristol, Connecticut.
Yes.
Yes.
And so
close to my hometown.
All those shows is on that campus. And so it's just a lot of walking and moving around. So I was tired at the end of the day.
Well, at least you got your exercise, right?
I did.
Didn't have to go to the gym.
And it was cold.
I watched a lot of those and listened to a lot of those yesterday. What do you think they're feeling about the Hawks right now, all those guys? I know you had to convince a lot of them throughout the day
yesterday. There are some who still do not
believe.
This
is what they say.
Still
this
don't
is
believe.
What they say. Right. Oh, your team is playing well, but can they play well in the playoffs? Yeah. Or is this team for real? I'm like, guys, look. This team went on the road. I said, forget about home. They went on the road and kicked everybody's butt, particularly out west.
Right.
I said, you think this is a fluke? I said, this team is for real. I said, there's a lot of people don't give us credit because the brand of basketball we play. And I said, and that's okay. We'll be the underdogs. But I said, if people can continue to look at our team as a fluke, they're going to get disappointed. Period.
Right. Well, you know, we don't fit the mold that they
and that's good.
They're looking for.
That's good. Know? And that's okay. You know, we just keep proving them wrong.
I can handle the studio people because you figure they're not going to have a clue. But the people like Tim Legler and Avery Johnson that sit in that studio who played the game.
They have no idea.
Played the game. They and they still, well, I don't know about the Hawks. I'm not real. Yeah. Really? Well, you look at a piece of tape.
Hey, right now, at this point of the season, you're talking 47 wins
right.
and 12 losses.
It's amazing.
Let me explain something to you, ladies and gentlemen. You know how difficult that is? You have no clue. Yeah. Have no clue how difficult that is. This team's for real. If they're going to win a championship, who knows? But this is a contending team. The championship, and people got to realize, there's only one team every year that wins the championship. It's one team. So right. that lets you know how difficult it is. But this team going to give themselves a chance to compete on a high level. That's all you can ask for. And whatever happens from there happens.
I think the comment that we keep hearing over and over again is that this team style of basketball is working great for in season, but that's what they're questioning. They don't understand that it can work.
Everybody who's won a championship through history have won it through team concept. Mm-hmm. You can't win a championship if it's not a team concept. They are no different than anybody else who's trying to win a championship. So they look at it as this new phenomenon. It's not new. Denver Nuggets one of the first teams to play that style of basketball. They give themselves a chance to win. This team is no different. It's a special team because no one as a whole plays that way for 48 minutes. We do. And plus, we're one of few teams in the league that actually play defense on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it. How many of our big guys have fouled out this year?
Does not happen.
Mm. Yeah, it doesn't
rarely
happen.
Rarely in foul trouble.
Maybe
doesn't
one
happen.
Because they don't have to cover every single possession for the point guard who can't keep people in front of them. And that's a small example, but it's one of the biggest examples, because if you know basketball, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But you have to have people who are willing to play defense out front. That way it protects the people in the back line.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody can shoot. And this is something that, you know, is a lost art in the game of basketball. And we have a team full of shooters. And people just have a hard time defending that. And anybody would. When you get down the last 5 seconds of a shot clock in an NBA game, you can just see the panic in most teams' faces because they've only got a couple of guys that can bail them out.
You know,
not so with
the
Hawks.
You know what the funny thing is about, because the way basketball is played in today's era, the Hawks have took it to another level. I mean, you don't have the big-time post-up players where you play the game from the inside out. But what they do very well is drive and kick, penetrating the lane where you got to help. And when you're fortunate to have so many guys who can shoot the ball, you got your center who can make threes. But where he's most dangerous, and again, Bob
mid-range,
and I talk about
mid-range.
It's the best in the league.
So all you analytics that think the big, think the mid-range game is not important, you might need to go back and reevaluate all your notes because you don't know what you're talking about.
We're so unique in that we have bigs that can run. You know, you see Al lead the break. You see Paul coming leading the break. That's very unusual, and it makes the Hawks very hard to guard. And when I hear this criticism of the Hawks, well, can you do it in the playoffs? I'm thinking, well, what's going to stop in the playoffs? Are they going to stop running? Are they going to stop moving?
Did they see the Hawks last year in the playoffs?
Should have beaten the number one
expected us to make the playoffs last year. We happened to grab the eighth spot. We scared the hell out of the Indiana Pacers. Without Al Horford, mind you.
Right.
So, you know what? But again, the critics are going to always be out there. So how do you silence critics? Keep winning.
Mm-hmm. So was this your day yesterday was answering to these questions all day long?
I got all day long. Oh, the Hawks are good. But are you guys for real?
I sent him a text yesterday afternoon about 5 o'clock. I said, I've heard every one of these shows. Everyone is the same narrative. Everyone is the same.
That's terrible.
And I've said, they just don't get it, do they?
They don't.
Well, they're not giving us any credit,
Isaiah
that's
Thomas
for sure.
Isaiah Thomas picked us to finish 8th this year at the beginning of the year. And I think you was at the town hall thing we had.
Right.
And what I say, I said, Isaiah's lost his mind.
You did. You said that.
I said, he's lost his mind.
Everybody cheered.
A couple of games in.
I said, we're in the top
four. You can say it again.
There was a
tonight.
TNT game that Charles Barkley was doing the analyst job on, and he said Detroit would make the playoffs and we would be in the 10 to 15 range. I remember sitting there it was like the second or third game of the season. It was one of the early TNT games.
It's just amazing.
They all seem to be so fickle and finicky, though, because when we watch them commentating, there was one night where Charles Barkley was all about the Hawks, and then a couple nights later, he didn't even mention us.
This is the problem. You know, the Hawks went through all those years where they had down moments and, you know, wasn't winning, never getting to the playoffs. So people were soured on the Hawks. Now they're starting to win over last year to now, and they're like, well, actually, you look at it. We've been in the playoffs 7 straight years.
Right.
It's no fluke.
Right.
So they don't trust us yet. They don't trust us for whatever reason. It's like, you know, guys, this is not an accident. These guys can play. And you talk about superstars. Well, I think we do have some superstars on this team. I think Paul Millsap is a star. In today's league, he's a star. In today's league, Al Horford's a star. Jeff Teague is a star. Those three guys are your stars on this team. I don't care what anybody says. The reason why they're all stars.
Mm-hmm. Just not scoring 40 points each, and right. I don't think that that's a marker
to,
for
look,
being a superstar.
You don't have to score 40 points a game to be a star. Right. If you look at Boston Celtics team back in the day, you had Kevin McHale, Larry Bird, Robert Parrish, Dennis Johnson. They had a team full of complimentary players, but they were stars, period.
And I was at some of those games.
And you had some guys. Robert Parrish didn't get 30, 35 a night. He was a Hall of Famer because he's a great basketball player. And I think that's what people kind of miss. Being a great athlete doesn't make you a great basketball player. If you ask me, would I rather have a great player or a great basketball player, what would you choose? I know your first thought is, oh, a great athlete. Yes.
Yeah. Right.
That's your first mistake. A great athlete going to give you a lot of oohs and ahs. Great basketball player going to beat you every
day. Yeah, I think the great basketball mind.
If you happen to be both, like Michael Jordan, myself, Clyde Drexler, Dr. J, happen to be both, and that's just
I think it's the basketball IQ is what we call it, right?
Well, basketball
IQ.
Well, great players have to have a great basketball IQ. You can't be
great
without
one. They're not just athletes. They're great basketball
IQ. Because I tell people all the time, when you see highlights of me, what is the first thing you see? Slam dunks, high wire. Look, to score the points that I scored, you had to be creative. Because when you look at my career, I only averaged two dunks a game. But those dunks,
they were
so
part
aggressive.
Of the game, though. They they weren't like showboat dunks that guys do now when they get out in front.
It was statements.
These were like on rebounds, offensive rebound dunks, and you know, go in the lane, spin away from a couple of guys, and then dunk. I mean, it was part of the game.
Yeah, I mean.
How many guys do you see in today's NBA get the ball in a low block, turn, and jam it? Nobody.
Nobody.
Did it every night. As part of the game.
Well, see, my thing, and this is one thing I want to tell people. You know, Rutherford and I talked about it. Bob, you know, we all talked about this. It's great. Jump shooting is great. But when you're not getting people in foul trouble, you don't take the steam out of the other team. I was upset if I didn't get 8 to 10 free throws every night, because if I knew if I can get a quick foul on Larry or a quick foul on James Worthy early in the game, I create an advantage for myself, because now he don't come at you as hard.
Because they're in trouble.
Yes.
They don't want to get in trouble.
That's why the inside game is so important. But guys, now it's content, especially big guys, any guy 6'8" to 7', all he want to do is shoot threes. And you have no inside points. That's what makes Zach Randolph so valuable. Marc Gasol so valuable, because they are going to pound you inside. That's a tough team to stop.
That is.
Well, before we have to wrap it up in a few minutes, I want to talk about what's going on the rest of the week. Today, what was your schedule like today? I know you're on this show.
Something to do after I leave. I don't know.
And then we have a big game tonight against the Houston Rockets, and I understand that James Harden isn't playing. He's suspended a game.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, so we're kicking a guy in the, you know.
The ding-ding.
I mean, we knew that was coming down.
Well, you also have
but that's going to hurt them tonight, though.
Yeah. We also have an event before the game tonight.
Yes. 6 o'clock conversation,
ticket
which
members.
Is awesome.
Yes.
We responded to that, so I will be there this evening myself. Rutherford, you too?
Absolutely.
Bob, you'll be there?
Of course.
Okay, well, I'll be there. And then tomorrow, we have a big day tomorrow.
Well,
I know that you have
a big event tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
A big dinner. That we're having. Well, my wife, she hooked everything. I don't really know what's going on.
I know.
Anything.
You're just going where people tell you this week.
Anything that's going on. So.
That's fun. That's exciting. I didn't tell him who was going to be here today, even though I saw him over the weekend. I didn't tell you who was coming today. I wanted you to be surprised and hope that it would be a lot of fun for you to not know who it was.
Is your speech done for Thursday?
That's why I haven't slept in the last three, 4 days. I mean, you know what? I've never been a guy that's been scripted. But, you know, I have things in my head, my heart, that I know I want to say.
So this speech is going to be bigger than your speech at the Hall of Fame.
Well, you know what? Not knowing really what to say, you know, because so many people that's been influential in your life. Is this, you know, how do you say it? Where do you start? You know, so
there's no time limit. So make sure you get it, because I agree with you, Bob. You know,
the rest of us have a time limit. You don't. You can go as long as you want.
This is for you, and this is Atlanta, and this is history, and this gives you a chance to breathe and exhale and acknowledge your mom, who used to be an agent for him. I remember back in the day, and really everybody, Dominique, and I think that Bob's point is so well made, that the city is so excited about this week and about a well-deserved tribute to our iconic basketball player. I mean, you know, we got Hank Aaron still out there, and he's a legendary, you know, person, and all the guys have come behind him. But, I mean, he is our Hank, you know, and Dominique is too young to be Hank
Aaron
at this point.
You know what this does for us as a franchise, as a city, is to let people know we play basketball in Atlanta too.
Right.
You know, it's not just Chicago and New York, L.A., but we play basketball here. And I'm just so happy that we have recognized that and hopefully and should continue to support our history of our franchise. You know, when I go to Cleveland and I go to New York and I go to Philly and L.A. and Chicago and see the history of the franchise displayed all over there. Because at the end of the day, that's a basketball arena. Yeah, you have everything going as far as entertainment, but that's a basketball arena.
Mm-hmm.
It should be displayed the right way because that's who we are.
The Hawks play here. The Hawks play here.
Everybody else is a guest.
Mm-hmm.
That's mine.
Yeah. Well, it is a super, super exciting week. And on Thursday, there is a luncheon and a ceremony to unveil the statue, which, by the way, was designed by Brian Hanlon, who is the sculptor for the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. And I know he approached you at the Hall of Fame to talk about the statue. So this has been an ongoing process. And
One of the guys who were responsible for that sitting right here. And
just
rough
yes, I was just going to say, Rutherford, I know that you were a huge support of this, as well as Steve Koonin. And
success has many fathers. And I'm telling you, you know, with all the delays and the impediments and, you know, the grit to get this done, I think the point is that we are doing this at the perfect time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Our team is on fire. I think nationally everybody knows that, whether they're just discovering that or not.
Yes.
And my 30 for 30 is coming out.
April, 30 for 30 is coming out. Steve's now also in the Radio Hall of Fame.
That was 2011, and then you were also named Georgia Sportscaster of the Year
And they got the
year,
Tweety Bird holding the mic, too, actually.
That's right. So I was just going to say before we go, just so it'll be on record, We all better get a mention in your speech on Thursday.
Oh, no question about it. Oh, you guys are part of that speech.
Okay, thank you. That's on tape now, and it's on the podcast.
Well, I'm going to let them know how important you guys are to this.
Yes.
Believe me.
And you are, and that's why you're here today. And we're very, very excited to have the two of you in the studio today together, and again with Rutherford and also with Neek, who having the three of you together in one interview segment is pretty exciting because you've never done it before.
No,
so
that's right.
I love being a part of history.
Joanne, I keep pointing out this is our first time all of us probably been on internet radio.
I don't even know
what that means other than my great-grandchildren. If there's a podcast they can
look
at.
Yeah, well, it'll be in perpetuity. You guys will all have a copy of it. You can share it wherever you like. It's a pretty cool era because we just launched this in November. This station started in February, and I'd never done this myself at all before November, and met Bob in May, and our show has taken off, and we've had
so
a
this show is
time.
Why they voted for neutrality at the FCC the other day.
I don't know. Have we caused a problem? Rich?
No, people want more of this. They want to hear more of Simply Buckhead Radio, want to hear more about the Atlanta Hawks for sure.
Well, we love it. And we've encouraged all of our listeners and readers, and we said it in my publisher statement, which you'll all see on the internet when we go up online on Thursday, as well as in the printed magazine. Please, people, come out, support the Hawks. Come down to the arena, see this statue, which puts Dominique in history in Atlanta as part of the team and the franchise and the city forever, and support your Atlanta Hawks. We're having a great year, and it's a great place to see a game and to be a part of something really special. Thanks, Bob, Steve, Rutherford,
Thank
and Neek for being here.
Well, appreciate you having
really
me.
Really loved
Thank
having
you,
you on
Thank
today.
You,
Thanks, guys.
This is great.
Appreciate it.